The moment we're in, pandemic, a racial reckoning, is going, we are realizing, to last a very long time. So Zadie Smith seems to be saying in her new essay collection, let's not wait to jot down some thoughts. Thank goodness, because the sum of her essays in the new collection, Intimations, captures this time like a watercolor. In the first scene, she's stopped, fingers curled around the iron bars of a New York City garden fence, her face poking through to look at a tulip in the garden enclosed inside. It was a few days before the global humbling began, she writes, when we would all be looking through barred windows, yearning for tulips. Tulips are not the thing encaged, we are. The New York Times called Intimations ultra-timely with a spirit both searching and brilliant. And Zadie Smith joins us by Skype from London now. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, and as you point out on the forward, it's a beautiful, slim, elegant book. You point out there will be many books written about the year 2020, historical, analytical, political, as well as comprehensive. This is not any of those. What is this?
That's a good question. I think it was my way of doing something. Almost instantly, I was aware of my uselessness. I mean, I guess novelists always feel to some degree useless, but I think it's compounded, particularly in revolutionary times, by having a family, having small children. It kind of struck me that the family is by nature the most bourgeois institution in the world, right? You can't get out on the march. So I was stuck with the only thing I can do, which is write. And I suddenly thought of it as a way of participating, of raising money, of being active.
Because the proceeds from the book will go to the Equal Justice Initiative and the COVID-19 Emergency Relief Fund for New York, where you were for the worst part of the pandemic, and we know how horrible it was in New York City, and described how everyone was feeling as being suddenly confronted with the problem of all artists, time and what to do with it.
I suppose I thought, like a lot of writers, that I would be good in this situation. They assume that, you know, if they were stuck in a situation alone, unable to go out, they would somehow function. And the opposite was true. I found it just as impossible as everybody else. I was just as destabilized by a complete revolution in time and space. And I guess for the first time in my life, I realized what I use writing for, to control what's going on around me. It's not something I'm particularly proud of as a personality trait, but I thought, as that is the way I respond, maybe the most useful thing I can do is make the situation clear to myself. Questions that I know came to everyone. What is it to suffer? What is it to know that other people suffer more than you? What is it to know you're in a transformative moment of history? I wanted to make those things clear for myself. And I've been reading Marcus Aurelius, and what struck me about that book, Meditations, is that though it's, you know, thousands of years in the distance, it was actively helpful to me. It was about structures of thought, how to think, and I could use it to apply to lots of different contemporary situations.
I loved this, and not, I'm going to be far less eloquent than you are, although you do have this one sentence here. You say you picked up Marcus Aurelius for the first time to read Meditations with the same attitude you bring to the instructions for a flat-packed table. It's like, right. You know, how do I unfold this thing? But I loved this notion of, you always hope that if you're going to be in a historical moment, you're going to be elevated and you're going to feel what you're supposed to do in that moment, and everything's going to be different and have this kind of fairy dust sprinkled over it. And instead, we're, you know, knocking around in our apartments and houses, not quite sure what to do.
Right. And I was just in awe, really, of everybody else. You know, I was at home with children, watching people in the streets, watching people volunteer, activism at every level. I know it's become common for everyone to describe themselves as an activist, but I have too much respect for the word to pretend that I am one. I'm not one. I'm a writer. My only role, as I saw it, it's not a very large one, was how can I perhaps create structures of thought that will help the kind of people who act, that will help them do what they have to do.
And you mentioned, too, that you had And in one of the essays, you go into a deep rumination over what is suffering. You get thrown into, well, is it suffering because I'm stuck in my house or I have to wear a mask? I mean, you read a news story you write concerning a young woman of 17, only 17, who had killed herself 3 weeks in a lockdown because she couldn't go out and see her friends. You know, she was not a nurse with inadequate PPE and a long commute, arriving at a ward of terrified people bracing for a long day of death. But her suffering, like all suffering, was an absolute in her own mind. She could not overcome it, so she died. You know, right. The nature of suffering. Am I really suffering if people can't breathe on ventilators or with someone's knee on their neck?
Right. There can be difference and equality at the same time. You can be having a different experience from someone else, and yet the extremity of it for you can feel equally extreme. That those are two hard thoughts to contain simultaneously, and I guess I noticed, especially with the speed of communication online, that it's hard to express those two things simultaneously. But I guess I think of my writing as a form of resistance against exactly that speed, a resistance against 140 characters, a resistance against the idea that my thoughts should be given to me each day by massive capitalist conglomerates of social media companies. Just, I wanted to try and give readers the thing I try and fight for myself, which is a space to think your own thoughts, whatever they might be.
Your postscript, contempt as a virus. You compare the pandemic to the virus that infects so many white Americans, although some may be symptomatic and filled with hate and racism. Others may be asymptomatic and still shedding virus, if you will. I mean, those are my words. Yours are far more eloquent. I mean, just this notion of deep-seated thoughts about, well, I'm a liberal and I'm this or that, but I'm not sure how many blacks I want living in my neighborhood. I mean, that would be more of an asymptomatic carrier. But this notion of racism being a virus too.
I guess the difference I feel from a lot of American thought on this topic is that I'm not actually particularly interested in personal morality. I'm interested in structures that are strong enough to keep us from behaving the way we tend to behave. And I was very struck when I got to England. I went to my little brother's birthday barbecue, and I was standing in this very small garden with about 40 people all standing separately 2 meters from each other, trying to... And they were of many different races, religions, classes. And I saw that my family was struck by this. And what I noted about it is it's not that England is such a multicultural, happy-clappy, post-racial society. It's none of those things. But that garden represented structures that had been put in place that allowed people to live near each other, to go to school together, to expect the same healthcare at the same point for free. That allowed for relations of equity. Not perfect. There is no such thing as perfect equity in England, in Europe, or in America. But that was a deep foundation of that barbecue. No one in that barbecue would have thought that way. But that's the truth. That's why they're all in the same room. It's not an accident. Structures allowed them to live in such a way that a party like that was far more likely than I had ever experienced in New York, for example.
You write, I used to think that there would one day be a vaccine against this virus of racism, that if enough black people named the virus, explained it, demonstrated how it operates, you know, look at that statue, I'm thinking as I read this, videoed its effects, look what's happening to George Floyd, I think, protested it peacefully, revealed how widespread it really is, how the symptoms arise, how so many Americans keep giving it to each other, irresponsibly and shamefully, generation after generation, causing intolerable and unending damage both to individual bodies and the body politic. I thought if that knowledge became as widespread as could possibly be managed or imagined, that we might finally reach some kind of herd immunity. I don't think that anymore. So you think it's the structures, it can't be the people.
Yes. I mean, whatever faith I had in personal morality is long gone. So for me, symbols, even statues, I don't doubt the strong feeling around these symbols, but for me, they are nothing next to equitable structures, economic, social.
That's Zadie Smith. Her new collection of essays about the moment we're in is Intimations. Zadie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So people left to their own devices can't erase racism. Maybe it's the same with the coronavirus?